that, I want to start with our year-end charitable tips. And I must tell you, this week we've been on with the press several times, and they have asked us, do we have clients that are making gifts for the purposes of taking advantage of greater tax deductions in 2016, given that tax rates will likely be higher or at least no lower than next year, i.e. if tax rates this year are at or higher than next year, then would it not make sense to get more tax deductions in 2016 versus 2017? And the answer is yes. Front load and push your deductions and expenses into this year, and push your income out into 2017, even on the prospect that President-elect Trump will lower the rates. And one of the areas that the press is focused on is, well, should people be doing more charitable work, and what are your clients saying? And I would emphasize here that our people, each of you, are focused primarily on charity for charity's sake, and benefiting those who you believe are in need, with a profound sense of appreciation for where each of you are. That being said, we know more than ever that the group of people that are listening in and that represent our clients would never be so naive to miss the potential tax advantages of making a decision to fund or make charitable gifts now versus the first week of January and what the potential impact could be. So, yes, the giving continues, and appropriately and with beneficence, yes. But please, John and team and Carol and Elizabeth and Ben and Maureen and who run the practice groups, please tell me what the best tax period to do it in. So, first of all, put away your checkbook and your credit card to the extent that you can. Use appreciated stock. For years, Rosemary and I, my wife, have made our charitable gifts with appreciated stock. The idea being that rather than selling the stock, paying the tax, using the proceeds, and then getting the tax deduction with a lower number, the net amount, we can give the fully appreciated stock and avoid having any shrinkage due to the tax sale. That allows for a bigger gift, and it allows more to go to the charity and for you to get the bigger deduction. I must emphasize that there are limits to which the amount that you can give when it comes to giving your appreciated stock. So you will receive a charitable deduction for the fair market value of the stock and no gains tax, but the full value is only deductible up to 30% of your adjusted gross income for that year. And the remainder can be carried forward for up to 5 years. So that should be a very common rule, a very common notion that you can give appreciated stock, but often people fail to realize that you have a limitation on the amount that you can give, which is 30%. So very, very important to keep that in mind. But that's one piece. Part two, and as we are doing more and more work with our clients, you can carry forward the deduction that you otherwise were not able to use in 2016. So we are finding many of you saying, is it disallowed? The answer is no, it's not disallowed if you're over the 30%, but you just have to carry forward to the years going forward. Many of you will say, well, I intend to give next year. And we would say good news is if you outsize the gift above the 30%, you'll carry forward and reset the clock for the gift for 2017 for 5 years of carry forward at that point. So do not believe that it's one and done and that you've lost that opportunity. Number two, let your IRA do your charitable giving. So in 2015, it was legislation made it permanent for the use of qualified charitable distributions. So if you're over 70 and a half, or even if you're below 70 and a half and you're in pay status, you are, and you're receiving required minimum distributions, RMDs, and you can elect to have all or part of the distribution up to the maximum of $100,000 sent directly to your charity of choice. The withdrawal will not be taxable and the minimum distribution requirement will be met. The distributions must go, however, to a public charity, and therefore the donations cannot be made to a private foundation or a donor-advised fund. It is important to note, though, that some IRA carriers, some of the administrators of IRAs that would custody your IRA are now talking about providing checkbooks. So rather than having to wire a portion of your required minimum distribution to the charity that you're seeking, you can actually carry a checkbook that would say, here is a check for $30,000 out of the $100,000 cap that I can to give away. I cannot emphasize to you, many of those who are on the call and are listening and otherwise who have large IRAs, and we've seen this with our deans and professors and administrators at universities. We've seen these with physicians who have an outsized IRA compared to their other assets, that the distributions from the IRA often exceed the amount that they need to live from when they get into pay status. And so in the past, what we have recommended, for example, is life insurance as a way to help help create utilization of a portion of the IRA to have a tax-free event for children and grandchildren. But in addition to that now, we can say that a portion of the IRA can go directly to charities, and we just think it is a phenomenal thing. As I said, when I crossed 50, a whole new paradigm for me in the way that we've approached the firm has been to advise and participate in charitable endeavors, either to sit on our clients' boards or to advise them on their own foundations. And being able to take a portion of your IRA and getting the direct deduction started in 2015 and continuing now is a phenomenal one. So we completely embrace that, and we encourage you to also check with your custodian for your IRA if they are issuing checkbooks so that you can make that distribution directly from the checkbook and not have to go through the machinations of the wire transfers. Next, itemize to get your charitable deduction. So interestingly enough, while everyone thinks that everything relating to trade and to big business and to income taxation, both for small and large, will be beneficial in 2017 when President Trump, elect Trump, comes in. By the way, I just noticed today he was Man of the Year for Time Magazine. I don't know that anybody would feel surprised given the election. But one thing that Trump has argued in his platform for taxes is that he would increase the standard deduction from $15,000 for individuals and $30,000 for married couples. That is a benefit. Indeed, so that you don't have to itemize up to $30,000. But here's an interesting point. In this year of 2016, the standard deduction for without itemizing is $6,300 for a single and $12,600 for married couples. So if you were to have $2,000 worth of deductions in 2017 because you overloaded your discount, your deductions in 2016, itemize in 2016, maximize and say get $25,000, $30,000 or $35,000 worth of deductions in 2016 by itemizing. Next year, you don't have to itemize if you only have a small amount of deductions. and you'll still get the standard deduction of $15,000, and $30,000 for married couples. Again, because the standardized amount, the standard deduction, and the amount that you can deduct in 2016 is so low, push your deductions from 2017 as much as you can into 2016, itemize your deductions, and take full advantage of it. Next year, you'll get a free gift in the form of a $15,000 standard deduction and $30,000 for married couples. Very, very important to keep that in mind. Again, as you all know, we're a significant part of our practice is now doing income taxes for our clients that the most sophisticated firms for many reasons are choosing that you would choose not to work with. But for us on the more modest level, every day we're doing income taxes, and these are some of the most important things we're emphasizing. Okay, as we move on, receipts. It is very, very important that you know that you cannot claim tax deductions for cash, a check, or other monetary gift unless you maintain records of the contribution in the form of either a bank record, such as a canceled check, credit card statement, a W-2 for charitable contributions through your employer, or a written communication from the charity, such as a receipt or letter showing the name of the charity, the date of the contribution, and the amount of the contributions. Again, the name of the charity, the date of the contribution, the amount of the contribution. If a donor makes a single contribution of $250 or more, the charity must include a statement to the effect that the charity did not provide the goods and services in whole or part in consideration for it. So golf outing, for example, you get something in return for that, but a specific gift of cash or otherwise, when it's over $250, the charity needs to provide you with a statement back for it, indicating the amount. So you must be on the lookout for it when you make those gifts, particularly if they are cash or not something that is easily traceable. We always make our gifts out of a checkbook. But it's not unusual if you're a church or in a temple to take cash and make that cash gift. That amount, however, is not deductible. In the end, the charity, you want the benefit. But through checks and through a disciplined form of giving, those things are easily traceable, and we want you to get your deduction. We also want to see the charities, your churches and your temples, and other charities that you're giving to benefit primarily, even as much as any other piece. But be tracking these statements coming back. The churches and temples are well-tuned, as other institutions, of sending a letter saying thank you for your $300 gift this week or this month, or your $3,000 gift or your $30,000 gift. Okay, number five, non-cash gifts. So there is additional reporting. You must file Form 8283, that is IRS Form 8283, for non-cash charitable contributions if the amount of all non-cash contributions is greater than $500. Donations of property valued at $5,000 or greater, excluding publicly traded securities, require a written appraisal by a qualified licensed appraiser. This is not child's play, not that any of you in this room, whatever, on this call or listening hereafter, would in any way take any less seriously than Form 8283 imputes. But what is important is to make sure that when you're making gifts of over $5,000, you're having a licensed appraiser. Okay, as we continue on, philanthropic strategies for 2017 and beyond. So there are several philanthropic strategies that can be utilized that can help implement your philanthropic mission. Make gifts that solely benefit the charities, as well as make gifts that can provide you with some financial benefits. Both provide you with the opportunity to provide immediate and deferred gifting. So one of our sweet spots has been and continues to be creating a family foundation. Okay, so I want to emphasize on the Family Foundation, the key piece that we are so attracted to is that it is something that we believe will live long after you yourself, to continue to honor your charitable intent and your mission for benefiting certain charities. It is essential to keep in mind that you can also retain control over the administration. You can set your donor patterns. You can choose how you want to invest the assets that are earmarked for future grant making while enjoying the income tax benefit immediately. But making the gifts to charities can be done in increments over time, so that you and your family can maximize your influence over their ongoing use to the selected charities. Too often, and for those who are on the call that are working for charities, hold your ears. The fight is for the charitable institution to secure a large gift, either during lifetime for either an endowment or for a building campaign or for their annual fund, or to receive it for a planned gift after death. So hard do they work at this, that they may invest years at that point. When the gift comes, it's almost felt as if this was earned, and that in some, and certainly it has, but that there isn't any further communication with the family once the gift has arrived. We've watched the short card come in to say after $1 million gift has gone to an educational institution with one of these, hey, thanks. And really, are we assuring that the university or the charitable institution or the medical institution is in fact continuing to follow your plans? These places are equally as happy to say you're going to make a gift over many years and that here are the increments. That helps them participate and secure budgeting for future years with the gifts you're making. This charitable, the foundations allow you that opportunity. They allow you to make the gifts over time. They allow your children to participate and gain influence in the social and the charitable world. They allow you to see the results of your work with gifts on an annual basis and keep that charity hungry to come back to you for further support and to demonstrate why they should receive it, rather than the single large gift. We absolutely adore the concept behind a charitable foundation as a way to keep the family together, to keep your children who may go to far-flung places through work and their spouses and their other loved ones, and yet to rally once, twice, three times a year under the guise of making gifts for those in need, not just the guise, but a true benefit, but still seeing the family together, we believe is one of the single most important driving factors for us. It is one of the primary reasons that I got into this business, to see that my family will continue to remain together, to support each other, and having a charitable foundation for sure allows them that opportunity. When you're making gifts directly to the foundation, you receive an income tax deduction only up to 30% of your adjusted gross income for cash gifts and 20% for appreciated stock. So the emphasis here is that the number is lower that you can maximize out when you're giving to your foundation. But that in my mind is a small price to pay given that you can carry forward that deduction in the years ahead, and you're getting a charitable deduction in the year you make it, and yet you can make your gifts over time with the foundation and having your family participate. With respect to appreciated stock, you will not have to liquidate any securities positions in order to make the donation, and again, therefore pay income tax on those pieces, which of course reduces the value. But you also can directly transfer the appreciated stock to the foundation and get the full deduction, and the foundation can then sell the position right after the transfer, and there's no tax event that occurs. Each year, though, the foundation is required to give 5% of its principal amount to public charities of your choice. At all times, the principal of the foundation compounds free of tax at the end and managed successfully. The required annual distributions will not deplete the principal. So if you see a portfolio that is growing at a greater than 5% per year, then you're not seeing any diminution in the underlying assets. There is a whole style, and your financial advisors and we who have been involved in looking at how to approach the investments in a charitable entity. And can we be, in some respects, more aggressive, ironically, in the investments of these assets because we have a longer horizon? There's a great article about a month ago focused on the Yale Endowment and the head of that endowment's work and his mission over the past 20 years. His name is Swenson. And his focus on using endowment and charitable monies for the institution was overwhelmingly weighted to small private companies, private equity, and hedge fund interests, which one would think would be far too aggressive. And in fact, his yield has far outsized the yield of similar institutions because of his approach. It is now the primary paradigm for these institutions. You can approach your charitable foundation with similar investment objectives, and the more that is in there, the more flexibility you have to choose among a variety of investment classes, and your financial advisors can help, and we can too. Please don't hesitate to reach us on that. Creating an operating foundation. This is something that for years we were not exposed to, but a wonderful woman who wanted to specifically benefit individuals rather than having it made a gift from her foundation being made directly to other 501c3 charities, said, I want to participate in the grant making and the charitable support. So an operating foundation is one that devotes most of its resources to the active conduct of exempt activities. And so you have to indeed pay a 2% excise tax on the income on an annual basis, but you do not have to distribute 5% of the market value of the foundation's investment assets, a significant piece, so that this private operating foundation, non-operating foundation, can, in fact, grow in its portfolio growth because you're only paying tax on the investment income. But you're also making specific gifts to individuals rather than to larger institutions and counting on them to benefit the people that you want. This is real work. But for those people who want a hands-on approach and have chosen this as their calling for a portion of their life, either after they've retired or something that they and their loved ones can work together, the Operating Foundation has been significant. So contributions of cash to private operating foundations are deducted by the donor to the extent of 50% of the donor's AGI, adjusted gross income. Still appreciated stock remains at 20%, but cash up to 50%. You can also now move into, and we can get this done for you this year for those who have not already done one, is to create a charitable remainder trust. So a charitable remainder trust are irrevocable trusts that provide for two classes of beneficiaries, right? So number one, you've got the income beneficiary who receives a fixed percentage of the income, and then you have the remaining assets of the at the end of the term, which is usually either up to 20 years or a lifetime. At the end, the charity would receive what is remaining inside the trust. Two benefits. You get a charitable deduction up front. You receive an annuity stream of money coming back to you, taxed on the stream that comes to you from an income tax standpoint, only on the stream. The assets can be sold inside the charitable trust, no tax event there. And then at the end, the remainder will go to charity. This is a significant and typical strategy and has gone on for years in the estate planning world. What we find most exciting about this strategy is who would the remainder be? Rather than one single entity, a charitable entity, or a group of four or five, choose the Family Foundation. So your loved ones and your children can all run that foundation with the assets that have flowed into that trust at the end of the charitable remainder trust period. So due to the fact that the gift of the remainder interest in the CRT is given to a tax-exempt nonprofit organization, you can qualify for the discount up front. The amount of the income tax deduction is based on the present value of the remainder interest to the charity, and that's limited to 20% of your adjusted gross income. Any part of the deduction not deployed may be carried forward for the succeeding 4 years. Okay. For example, if your income is less than the deduction. At the time stock positions owned by the charitable remainder trust are sold, or if there are capital gains or other financial investments of the charitable remainder trust, there will be no federal income tax due, since the trust is a charitable entity which does not pay taxes on the capital gains. Instead, the income beneficiary will pay the federal income tax each year on the amount of the annuity payment, which we've spoken about before. Oftentimes, clients consider the use of the after-tax annuity payments to acquire life insurance. We think this is a great way to replace the asset that you've given away into a trust, which would diminish your estate. We've done some great tax planning there in getting upfront immediate deductions, but now we can use the annuity stream from the charitable remainder trust to pay for life insurance, and that would be life insurance would be in its own separate trust and would provide a tax-free benefit to your loved ones. We can also choose a charitable lead trust. How does that work? Well, try to reverse the envelope here and say that in this instance, the charity would be the recipient over a period of years of an annuity stream. As we spoke about before, if you were doing a foundation, slightly different, you're making the gift into the foundation, you're getting the benefit up front. But each year you can make gifts to the kinds and types of charities that you support. So here, what we would do is create a charitable lead trust to say up front for the next coming years, and that amount of time could be 5, 10, 20 years, where the income flowing out would go to the charity and you would get a deduction in that year. And at the end, the remainder would go to your family. Interestingly enough, the income flowing out could go to your private family foundation, which would be a wonderful way to continue to fund that, and indeed we support that. So, again, the end user being your family foundation and supporting the notion of your family remaining together each year to make these gifts from the foundation each year out to the charity. But immediately the distribution each year from the charitable lead trust would go into the family foundation. Of course, these assets would be permanently excluded from your estate for estate tax purposes when you do the calculation. So we'll often see a charitable lead trust be used. Leon Hess, who passed away not so long ago in the state of New Jersey, had a significant trust created that was a lead trust, where the charities received it each year, but the remainder then went of the foundation of the gift would go to his family members and go tax free. It is a great way that he avoided a 50% tax on those assets that would have otherwise been subject to diminution. So when the trust terminates, the assets remain the past to the designated beneficiaries free of tax. And for those with a strong interest in making charitable donations, the charitable lead trust provides a means to make the donations to charities without completely disinheriting the children. With a grantor charitable lead trust, in the year of the contribution, the grantor gets an immediate charitable deduction for the present value of the payments to be made. Will it be exactly that? We don't know, because it's all about the performance of the underlying portfolio. What we're focused on in that as well is making sure that we're growing the underlying assets inside the charitable lead trust so that more would go to your loved ones free of tax based on the calculation. In the low rate interest rate environment today, this reduces the annual charitable donation and increases the probability of greater assets passing. That is why we're seeing today more than ever charitable lead trust in this environment being employed by our clients who are charitably inclined. The challenge is to manage assets so that they generate the necessary payments for the charity while at the same time providing growth that will pass for the family. The last piece is to consider making gifts to donor-advised funds. So a donor-advised fund is a separately identified fund that is maintained and operated by a 501c3. Most of your financial advisors within their firms have opportunities to do DAFs, so donor-advised funds. Each fund is composed of contributions made by individual donors. Once the donor makes the contribution, the organization has the legal control over it. However, the donor retains only, but advisory privileges with respect to the distribution. So the donor can advise the charitable entity that is held by the financial institution, the donor advised fund, what charities they would like to make, and almost exclusively the financial institutions make that gift. It is a shortcut to creating a more family-focused lifetime plan of the foundation. But sometimes we'll have clients that will say, look, I want to get a charitable gift done. This is the only time I'm going to do it. It's a $50,000 amount. Let me get it in, and then at least in the years forward, I have this donor-advised fund that's compounding free of tax, and then I can advise the financial institutions as to where I want the gifts to go. It serves a purpose, and we cannot disagree in any respect with the value of that. You do want to make sure that if your financial advisor is going from one firm to another, that he can or she can, in fact, transfer the donor advised fund when they go. The fees are also higher than they would normally be for managing assets because of this entity that you've created. It serves a purpose, and it should be explored in concert with the Charitable Lead Trust, the Charitable Remainder Trust, and, of course, the foundation being the recipient of all of these. It is important to emphasize, though, that the deductions that can be taken when you transfer assets are 50% of the adjusted gross income for gifts of cash and 30% for gifts of appreciated securities. So there is at least initially an income tax benefit if your gifts would somehow exceed the 30%. That you would have under a foundation that you'd have to carry forward in the years to come. So we want to look at this also and say, are you making a gift high compared to what your earnings would be in that given year? And the donor advised fund could have some greater immediate tax benefit than having to carry it forward. But we need to look at the total vision of you as to what your charitable entity should be and what your wishes are.